To music now, two new albums and one Christmas EP up for review this evening. With me in studio are Rachel Breslin and Chris Wasser. They've been listening to two albums, Monument to an Elegy from the Smashing Pumpkins and Bastille vs. Other People's Heartache 3 from Bastille. The EP they've been listening to is Los Campesinos Christmas from Los Campesinos. We'll start with the Smashing Pumpkins. Opening track of the album is called Tiberius. Tiberius from the Smashing Pumpkins and their new album Monuments to an Elegy. Rachel, Smashing Pumpkins have been around for quite a while, various incarnations, so what's the current situation with?
Yeah, they sure have. They've been around since 88, I believe, but they didn't kind of come to commercial success until the middle of the 90s, which is... Well, I kind of feel like I'm in the really fortunate position of having given up the Smashing Pumpkins at just the right moment. I loved them in the 90s for the album Siamese Dream in 93 and Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, which was their most popular one to date. And I kind of just stopped listening to them at that point, and I haven't listened to them since. So I was coming at this from that point of view. I think I left them at the right time because I believe they haven't been living up to those two albums.
Yeah, would you say, Chris, that in more recent times things haven't been so hot for the Smashing Pumpkins?
They haven't now, and I never really gave them up.
Are you a big fan? You are a big fan, Richard, or were?
I was a big fan.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Chris? I wouldn't be a huge fan. I did love those albums that you were talking about there, but when Billy Corgan went off and formed Zwan and then came back with Jimmy Chamberlain and made the Zeitgeist album, I just wasn't into it all. It's a rubbish album. But what he's been up to lately, Billy Corgan, is this three to four album cycle, which he calls Tear Garden by Kaleidoscope. And the plan there is to release a number of albums all tied together by the same concept, about 40 or 50 songs. And this is the second installment in that. It sounds a little bit confusing. Why can't he just put out albums? So I was thinking, you know, do we really need a 10th Smashing Pumpkins album in our lives? And then, you know, I hit play on Monument to an Elegy, and I thought, this is brilliant. It's probably because he hasn't really stripped things back, Billy Corgan. It's a band record, but, you know, Billy's all over, he plays nearly everything, but he's just, you know, the songs, most of them clock in at about 3 minutes. The entire album is only about 34 minutes long. He brought in Tommy Lee of Motley Crue fame to play the drums, and it's just such a strong, urgent record, and not an alt rock record the whole way through. There's a lot of synth pop in there as well, and it really took me by surprise.
The title Monuments to an Elegy, it sounds a little bit pretentious, when it comes to pretentious titles, I think the second album wins that award.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I actually don't know how you remembered all those titles without looking at your notes, Chris. I'm really impressed, because Monument to an Elegy and also Tear Garden by Kaleidoscope, like, to me the titles, just, they're a bit of a mouthful, they're quite cumbersome, and it made me quite wary that this album was going to be pretentious, although it did prove me wrong. It is more simple.
So the music wasn't as cumbersome as the titles,
no,
then?
No, absolutely not, in a good way.
Why did it work, do you think?
For me, it worked because, well, as Billy Corgan has said himself, that it's a return to his psychedelic roots. Although it's not exactly the same as those albums from the 90s, it's not a million miles from them either. And I feel like that's a good move.
And I think we heard that in the opening track in particular. Let's go down to the final track in the album, Anti-Hero, and see if that 90s feel is still there. Chris, I think that gives us a sense. It's the same, you know, rocking guitar that's there. What about lyrically, Billy Corgan? You know, in those early albums, he was quite highly praised for the lyrics. What's he doing in this later manifestation?
Yeah, he would have got a lot of college students on his side. You know, Billy Corgan has something intelligent to say. Sometimes his lyrics can be quite indecipherable, but on the last few Smashing Pumpkins albums, or anything that Billy Corgan was involved in, he always sounded like what you were saying there. He always sounded a little bit angry with the world, but now it almost sounds like a love album. Sometimes he's telling this person, whoever she may be, you know, I don't love you anymore, or I still love you, or you know, the world's on fire, so am I. And he actually sounds like he's just in a fantastic mood.
He never says anything too tenderly, though.
No, but you would have heard two big rock tracks there.
Yeah.
As I said, there are a lot of synth pop offerings on this, and it's really tuneful, quite melodic, and it really suits him. Whatever he's doing in his personal life, it seems to be affecting his work in a great way.
It's a lot more tender than the Rat in the Cage of the 90s, isn't it?
Absolutely.
All right, well, you're clearly both happy bunnies tonight. How's Billy managing then for this album, Monuments to an Elegy from the Smashing Pumpkins? Stars out of five from you, first of all, Chris?
Expectations were quite low given what they've released in the last few years, but I was pleasantly surprised here. Perfect five, I think.
What?
Yeah.
A perfect five.
It's nearly Christmas. I give it to him.
All right. Well, obviously, you're in a generous mood. Are you in quite the same place, Rachel?
Definitely not, even though I have almost the same comment written as Chris, that it's accessible, but it's not as disappointing as expected. I was giving it a 3 out of 5, I'm afraid.
Three. All right. Not as disappointing as expected.
No.
Doesn't sound like huge praise.
No.
All right. Let us move on then to album number 2. And I mentioned titles. This one is called Bastille versus brackets, Other People's Heartaches 3. Close brackets. Rachel, I don't think that Bastille versus Other People's Heartaches 1 and Bastille versus Other Heartaches 2 ever saw the light of day. So why are we at number 3?
Well, I believe they were released as free downloads. This is the first one that was is being released commercially that people can pay for. And I have a feeling I might be the only person in this room who's going to say that this album is not half as objectionable as I expected it to be. I came at this thinking about how much I absolutely hated that single Pompeii, which is their most popular one from a few years back. And for me, it was just that had this real false sincerity and the sort of anthemic sound and the grandiose concept that he was using. It just did nothing for me. But coming at it from that point of view, this album kind of pleasantly surprised me.
Now, I don't quite understand why when you're collaborating with somebody that you say versus, because everybody that they collaborate, the songs are Fall Into Your Arms, for example, the opening track is Bastille versus the Gemma Sharples Quartet, or the one we're about to listen to now, Bite Down, it's Bastille versus Haim. What's the versus all the people about? Are they not collaborating?
No, even that title itself, that just tells you that these lads take themselves very seriously. There's a lot of guest artists on this album. There's a guest artist on every track, MNEK and various hip-hop artists. And you'll have to excuse my ignorance, but I did not know who a lot of these people were. But they're just touring buddies or peers or guys they would have come across in the studio. And while Bastille gets to work on a proper second album, because they do only have one proper album to their name, they just thought, okay, we'll throw out another mixtape. The problem there is they're still quite a young band, and I think
it's
best
one album,
that's it. Yeah, it sold 3 million copies. It's done very well, obviously,
and won them a Brit Award as well.
I think you should leave this kind of stuff for your twilight years. You know, not everything that a young band does should go out into the public.
Okay, we'll come back on that, but let's have a listen to Bite Down. I don't know whether that's advice to us or not, but Bite Down is the title of the track. Bite Down from Bastille versus Haim. I still can't get over this versus aspect of things. A lot of it is that sort of high, poptastic, dancey type of stuff. Does it ever move away from that, Rachel?
Yeah, it definitely does. For me, you're talking about this versus thing. I think it's like you use the word versus when there's two people in competition, and in every track they're versus somebody else, and in most of the tracks the other artist wins, I'm afraid to say. Well, it does move away from that sound. One of the tracks that stood out for me was the final track on the album, which is called Remains. It features a guy called Rag and Bone Man, who is a very unlikely looking blues singer from Brighton, but he has an absolutely incredible voice. Mm. I didn't know of him before. I had to look him up, I must confess. Also Skin from Skunk Anansie, who were a band from the 90s. And again, I could describe her voice with the exact same, like, it's so distinctive and powerful. Her voice is absolutely amazing.
And it doesn't sound like Bastille, we were saying.
No, and it's quite interesting that they chose these two incredible vocalists to put together in this one track. And the singer from Bastille, Dan Smith, his name is, he just has a tiny part at the beginning of the song, and after that it just sounds like two other vocalists collaborating. It's really good.
They do one track by themselves as well. It's The Driver, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a good sci-fi soundtrack feel to that as well. And like the production here, it is quite cinematic. You only have to look at actually the front cover of the album, Bastille, you know, the list of credits. They present their albums as though they're films. And there are some good moments on it. I particularly enjoyed that Haim track, but it's almost like it just feels like a stopgap though. Dan Smith's vocals begin to grate after a while. The lyrics are a little bit weird. There's one in particular, keep on talking to yourself because you're going to have to swing that axe around here, and I thought, what does that even mean? He is quite po-faced, quite serious, and it sounds like an album or a collection of songs that you'd hear when you walk into, you know, a Top Man store to go rooting for clothes, and you know that kind of music that just hits you over the head, but once you leave the store, it's out, it's gone.
I'm obviously shopping in the wrong shops.
Yeah, there you go.
The Driver, let's have a listen to The Driver then, because this is, I suppose, possibly the slowest or most easygoing track on the album. Some of the team, Rachel, talking about the drama that is in all of these tracks. Would you buy into that? I mean, Dan Smith's voice there certainly in high dramatic mode.
Yeah, the drama is there. I don't like that aspect of his voice at all. Like I said the word anthemic at the beginning, it's reminiscent of Coldplay. I just don't like this at all.
But one question though, you know, we were talking about they've had the big success with album number one, and really this isn't a full album, if you like, it's sort of a mixtape thing. Is that a good idea maybe to actually, let's not rush into album number two?
Well, the way I see it, the danger there is that this mixtape, they're not calling it an album, they're calling it a mixtape, is much, much better than what they have on their album. I prefer it when they collaborate with other people. Like I said, I was pleasantly surprised by this because I was expecting all these tracks like Pompeii, you know, which I just could not have stuck.
All right. Stars out of five then from Bastille versus Other People's Heartache 3. Stars from you, Rachel, first of all?
Well, again, because I had different expectations, I was pleasantly enough surprised and I'm going to give it 3 out of 5.
So it gets 3. And from you, Chris?
I think they're quite ambitious. Certainly can't fault Dan Smith's work rate. But I don't know what they're singing about half the time and the tunes just didn't stick. And I just think just get to work on that second album. So 2 stars.
It's 2 from you. All right. So I did say 2 albums. So we have an album, a mixtape and now an EP. Christmas EP, in fact, from Welsh band Los Campesinos. It's called Los Campesinos Christmas. We were reviewing Christmas albums last week with great fun, I thought, Rachel. We didn't go into the indie direction at all.
No.
How did you get on with this particular EP?
I liked this EP overall. I did.
6 tracks is quite short, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, and I enjoyed it. It opens really strongly with a song called When Christmas Comes. I have written down here that I would certainly put this on my hipster, I mean my indie Christmas EP compilation.
All right. Yeah, well, yeah. Stroke your beard and listen to what happens when Christmas comes. Oh, it's behind you. Obviously, that was their inner pantomime being tapped into there. When Christmas Comes from Los Campesinos. I don't think that's going to be a classic Christmas song next year or the year after or possibly next decade, Chris.
I don't think so, no. I mean, I was hoping, you know, it's nice to hear a band putting in the effort to try and end that, you know, modern Christmas song drought and think, okay, we can make a great modern Christmas record. But this album or this EP is actually composed of songs that, a few songs that were released as singles over the last few Christmases. And then there is one cover at the end, which I'll get to. But it's just that, you know, Gareth Campesinos, you know, they all have last names named after the title of the band. He's talking about how, you know, a lost love of Christmas and I wish I could see you and, you know, running through bustling streets and everyone's doing their shopping. And he's certainly setting the scene, but that Dexy's E Street Band sound, you know, it's admirable, but there's no real, you know, stamp of identity. There's no real identity about this record. It just passes you by.
It's a bit of a downbeat Christmas. Like, they don't seem to be having a good time. You know, at one point they're singing about the holly and the ivy and everything's great, but they managed to do that as the most, you know, sad carol in the Christmas carol.
Yeah,
in
but
the
if
world.
You'll remember from last week, that's the kind of Christmas music I like, Sean, the darkest, most depressing. I would agree, like, with a lot of what Chris just said, but like that track, When Christmas Comes, you said it's not going to be a Christmas classic, maybe not, but it's really catchy. You'll definitely find yourself singing along to it, I think. Lyrically, though, I would agree with what Chris said.
I see
it's not
Chris's
very strong.
Eyebrows have just raised about 2.5 inches when you said it's really catchy.
It didn't stick with me. Now it sounds they're a huge band. They're you know, especially live. There's a huge excitement about them with fans. But it almost sounds like at times if Arcade Fire were to go off and make a Christmas record, but you know forgot to make the effort.
Your face is quite glum when you say that, Chris. You're smiling with delight at that thought, Rachel.
I would love if Arcade Fire did
a Christmas album. Well, you know, at least they'd probably make a good one. But the one thing that just kills me about it is that there is a cover at the end of Mudd's Lonely This Christmas. And I love that song. It's quite a depressing tune, but they just murdered it. And if Les Gray hadn't written those lyrics, I would have thought, Gareth, there is a reason you're lonely this Christmas.
All right, I think the jury is very much split in the case of this particular song. So we will let people listen to it and then we will give an overall verdict on whether this is a good version of the Mudd song or not. Mind you, if you are lonely this Christmas because somebody's not around and you play that, I don't think you'll be smiling at the end of it.
I think his voice brings even more desperation to the already quite down lyrics.
But you quite like that.
I really do like it, yeah. It's almost discordant the way his voice was there, we were just saying, and yeah, I like it, yeah.
Just don't play it again.
It's been suggested to me by my producer that this is a song for roaring into your hairbrush while possibly under the influence of alcohol.
Sounds great.
Maybe, yeah, with the original, but just not that one at all.
I mean, sounds like a good Friday night to me.
Also, I love the title of the second last track on the album, The Trains Don't Run, brackets, It's Christmas Day.
Yeah, that's even worse. It's just a very sad and depressing Christmas album. Maybe sometimes though they make for the best Christmas tunes,
but they're self-aware in their tweeness with a title like that as well.
Yeah, I think they are stroking their hipster beards while doing that. All right, 3 albums. Oh, sorry, stars out of 5 from you first of all, Chris.
I appreciate the thought that, you know, they wanted to go and make a Christmas record and, you know, maybe have some fun at Christmas gigs around this time of year, but no, it just doesn't work. 1 star.
All right, and from you, Rachel.
I say well done, Los Campesinos. 3.5.
3.5 and 1. Okay, a Los Campesinos Christmas, Bastille versus Other People's Heartache 3, and Monuments to an Elegy from the Smashing Pumpkins, the albums we were speaking about this evening. They are all out now.